Welcome to another episode of the Oncology on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Russ Conroy. Welcome to a very special edition of Cancer Network's Oncology on the Go. I'm your host, Russ Conroy, and I'm here today in the flesh with a very special guest, none other than Dr. Chinmay Jani. Thank you very much for coming here to speak with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure. We have been doing this lot of different recordings through virtually, but being here live in studio is a different feeling. So thanks a lot for flying me down from Miami.
Yeah, of course. I imagine you've been very busy just today alone here in scenic Cranberry, New Jersey. How has it been getting here?
No, it was great. New Jersey is almost home away from home for me. New Jersey and Boston both, I would say. Really great Indian food, which we don't find right now in Miami. So it was a great time. I have lots of friends around and family around. So it's a great place to be. And one of the biggest temples is also one of the nearby here as well. So a lot of Indian touch. That makes me just feel homely in New Jersey. Well,
that's great. Yeah, definitely a very homely vibe here. But just to get into it, you know, looking to get into the details regarding a whole lot of research that you've been involved with, spanning from artificial intelligence to different aspects of thoracic oncology. So just to start, I know you presented a poster at ASCO evaluating essentially AI decision support making in EGFR mutated non-small cell lung cancer. What did findings from your research show about how AI sort of impacts decision-making across these different lines of treatment?
So first and foremost, artificial intelligence is no more a part of future. It's already here in presence, and therefore we need to validate it. Artificial intelligence is no more now utilized just by patients, but it is also now utilized by physicians as well. And in the past, when I was in medical school, we used to say there was Dr. Google. And then eventually we had many more universities, which would come from WhatsApp University or many other platforms as well. And now all these different LLM models are having their own universities. A little bit of jokes apart, it's very important to identify if all these resources, what patients are having, is it really good and how much validated it is. That's where this idea and concept started. At the same time, there are really nice two tools as well that physicians can use. One of them is Open Evidence. Many other are already evolving as well. And another one is ASCO AI tool. I presented this at ASCO 2026. And ASCO has its own tool as well, where you can put in patient information and it will guide you guideline-based approach on what next steps to be done. That's why we collaborated with Larval AI team. And we validated and tried checking that how are all these models doing. So what we did was we gave them a prompt to all these LLM as well as two AI models. The four LLMs that we did was ChatGPT, Claude, Gemini, and Grok. And the prompts were, depending on cases, if these cases are given to 100 oncologists from United States, what would be the answers being picked up from the 4 to 5 options that we gave? Now we selected 6 cases from the frontline approach of EGFR and 6 cases from the second line approach of EGFR. Why EGFR? Because EGFR is currently one of the most evolving field in lung cancer. For the first line itself, we have 3 treatment approaches. And for the second line, we have, depending on what treatments were given in the first line, next treatment could be given. So we identified and we did concordance between expert opinion. So we had around 5 thoracic oncologists from University of Miami, MD Anderson, and UAB evaluate and answer these cases as well. So we did concordance of these LLM models with expert opinion, as well as divergence internally, as well as divergence from expert opinion as well. Going into most important results, the first and foremost I would like to highlight is that in the frontline setting, LLM models and the AI tools did really well comparatively. Why I say that? So the ASCO AI tool and ChatGPT were 80% concordant with expert opinion, which is quite good. Other LLM models and the tools went a little bit lower. However, in the second line setting, it flipped. The highest concordance was found was around 0.49, which is like 49% for Gemini, which is like flip of a coin, 50% yes, 50% no. And most of the other models were even lower, and some of the models were also in the negative side. It just showcases that second line setting is more intricate. It depends a lot on the case scenarios as well, resistant mutations, etc. But still, the current AI models are not yet ready for the second line setting. However, for the first line setting, it was quite reliable. One extra layer I would like to say is that ASCO AI utilizes Gemini as an underlying LLM model, but ASCO AI had even better concordance than the underlying LLM because there was an extra guideline layer. So guideline-based tools are getting more and more reliable. And this analysis was done in January when I was about to submit the ASCO abstract. So right now when we are in June, probably in 6 months, they have even become more better as well. Therefore, AI is evolving. We need to validate it, and we'll be able to utilize it more and more in future too.
I see. Thank you for thoroughly breaking down that work you presented at ASCO. Very exciting to be sharing that those kinds of findings at a big meeting like that. Just as a follow-up, how was the rest of the meeting? I imagine it was pretty packed from beginning to end.
ASCO was a fantastic conference this year, 2026. There was lots of newer updates happening in oral presentation for lung cancer as well. There were two lung cancer presentations in the plenary as well. So a lot of moving things happening in lung cancer in the non-small cell aspect, in the stage four, in the early stage setting, as well as in the small cell lung cancer aspect too. My second interest and second focus is also on developmental therapeutics and immunotherapy in the developmental therapeutics. So there were lots of newer treatments and novel therapeutics being showcased at ASCO, including utilizing of liquid biopsy, whether it's MRD testing, resistance, etc. So ASCO was phenomenal, like as always.
So, that's great. I'm glad you had a very great time over at the annual meeting, especially knowing just how enormous the conference can be. I imagine that can be incredibly overwhelming for certain people, especially if you're going there for your first time. You know, I feel like there should be some kind of resource to help people prepare for a meeting of that sort. But luckily, you know, for our viewers and listeners at home, I'd like to take this moment to remind you that Dr. Chinmayjani was involved with a very excellent series as part of our Career Center platform, giving you all the tips and tricks on how to make your first ASCO annual meeting a great one. So I know ASCO has passed within the last few weeks, but 2027 annual meeting, that's right around the corner. It'll be here sooner than you think. So,
and a big shout out and kudos to Dr. Jonathan Lee as well, my partner, who came up with this idea to have this ASCO-based series so that incoming residents, trainees, and also incoming fellows can easily look it up. It's not many minutes long. It's a quick, and people can easily look into it as well.
Yep. Very well put. Now that we got the shameless plug out of the way, before I deride the conversation any further, sort of centering back on the research you presented, based on these findings and perhaps other trends in the field, what more rigorous validation, clinical safeguards when harnessing AI for oncology decision-making, what are the next steps there?
So I think so for clinical decision-making, again, focusing on physician aspect as well as patient aspect. Let's focus on physician aspect. So guideline-based tools are more reliable. Lots of different platforms are already partnering with various different publication houses and incorporating NCCN guidelines as well as ASCO guidelines too, especially on the oncology side. And that's giving more up-to-date answers. One thing that we also found in our research when we were diving in deep was also that many of the times these LLM tools or sometimes the guideline-based tools were not up-to-date. There were 5 to 6 months of lag sometimes or sometimes less than that, but still that lag was quite big enough the way oncology is evolving, especially in lung cancer and many other fields as well. So that's why reducing that gap is very important for all the LLM models as well as for the AI tools. The second thing was also hallucinations. And then the hallucinations, reducing that is very important. And lots of AI tools are learning by itself too. One thing which I would like to highlight that patients as well as physicians can be mindful about is the information that you put in. And the way you put in. One is being HIPAA compliant because you don't want to share the PHI information. Second thing is how much information and how accurate information you're putting in. If the same patient case scenarios are put by two different physicians or two different patients, and one person has included all the pertinent information about the liquid biopsy, about the comorbidities, about the ECOG performance status, age, sex, where the person is located, what's the preference, etc., the answers will be way more accurate and reliable and precise as compared to just putting like a one-liner of 52-year-old, stage 4, EGFR mutation positive, first-line treatment, and has underlying hypertension. That would give you way more vague answers as compared to being more precise. That's why what we can do at physician level or what patients can do at their own level is giving the best and most accurate prompts to these models to get the best answers out.
Yeah. That sounds like some very important next steps, and perhaps you've hinted at this already, but beyond its current capabilities, how do you envision AI transforming in terms of things like perhaps research, documentation, and so forth over the next couple of years, and how do you see that impacting clinical workflows?
So I would say AI is going to be a very helpful and essential tool for medicine, for healthcare implementation, as well as for research. For oncology and healthcare implementation, I would say a few things which are going to be very impactful is certainly documentation, scribes. There are lots of different tools which are now incorporated into EMR. So we utilize Epic back in University of Miami, and we have one of the tool which is Suki that helps a lot in like picking up exact information that can be documented, reducing our time for documentation and becoming more and more efficient. Second thing is in navigation as well, that there are various different aspects of navigation which can be made even more efficient at the healthcare system level too. Third thing is also clinical trials matching. So various different education system, various different academic system, as well as companies are trying to identify and develop tools which can help in best clinical trial matching with precision medicine approach too. The other aspect is research. And research is like utilizing AI models for statistical analysis. Again, that requires separate validation as well, or meta-analysis. Again, our collaborator Larval AI has their own tools for doing many of this analysis too. And at the same time, AI can be also helpful in documentation and preparing manuscripts too. But there has to be an important aspect and a layer of ethics. So you can utilize it as a tool in modifying and making it more refined. However, if you're completely relying on it, then that's not your research. And we need to be more mindful about it as well. And various publication houses are mindful about it too. That's why AI is going to be, I think, so going to impact the entire continuum of oncology. And we just need to start utilizing it here and there as and well possible for as a tool.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Definitely sounds like there's a lot to look forward to as far as artificial intelligence is concerned in the oncology realm. But thank you for going into detail about these next steps and initiatives. I think that covers a lot of ground in terms of the AI side of things. But to focus a little bit more on your expertise in thoracic oncology, what kinds of research are you and colleagues currently leading to help overcome perhaps immunotherapy resistance and harnessing biomarkers in lung cancer care? And how might these strategies sort of elevate the quality of care for this patient population?
So thoracic oncology is evolving rapidly. Down at University of Miami, I would say we are doing projects revolving around three main aspects with me and my mentors. One aspect is on precision medicine. So we are looking into various different NGS testing, NGS platforms, and identifying various different resistance patterns of different treatment. Along with that, we are also utilizing serial testing to look into tumor biology evolution too. The second important aspect of NGS is also identifying if MRD testing can be helpful or not helpful too in the earlier stage setting, and then incorporating all these different NGS testing and liquid biopsy or tissue biopsy into clinical trials as well. So liquid biopsy and NGS is a constantly evolving field, and it can help and guide us a lot into biomarker identification as well. The second aspect is on immunotherapy resistances, how can we improve outcomes for patients who are receiving immunotherapy? And in that, I would say three aspects which we are focusing as well as immunotherapy combinations. So adding something to it. So we have a really good translational lab run by Dr. Watson and Dr. Baik, who are focusing on probiotics as well. So we are looking into combinations of immunotherapy with the probiotic combination to improve outcomes as well. That's a clinical trial we are hoping to begin very soon. The second one is also looking into various different diabetic medication that can be incorporated into and along with immunotherapy in different stages of lung cancer. Third one is there are various different clinical trials ongoing. Some of them, which I would like to highlight, is also going on in our phase one clinic at Sylvester, as well as next sequencing with newer bispecifics or oncolytic viruses. Those can help us in improving the outcomes for immunotherapy. One important aspect is to identify biomarkers, which can help us know which patients are going to do better with immunotherapy as compared to those who might not be doing that well. One of these biomarkers which we are looking into and we are studying more is also called TEM8 biomarker. We are looking into small cell lung cancer, high-grade neuroendocrine cancers as well, and there is some potential really promising role in non-small cell lung cancer too, that it can give us some information to differentiate between hot and cold tumor microenvironment. So these are various different projects that are ongoing on the immunotherapy aspect and on precision medicine down at University of Miami.
Gotcha. Just as you put it, a lot of exciting work going into both the precision medicine as well as the clinical trial aspects. I suppose another key area of interest for you is the side of early cancer detection. So could you elaborate a little bit more perhaps on some of the work that you're leading there and how it might be be important in the grand scheme of things?
So back in my residency, I had a mentor, Dr. Carrie Thompson, who is a very big proponent of lung cancer screening. She's chair of medicine in Mount Auburn Hospital. And with her, I did a project on lung cancer screening on combining mammogram with lung cancer screening as well. It's now published. We presented at CHEST as an oral presentation on how utilizing the existing infrastructure of mammogram and breast cancer screening can help us improve lung cancer screening, at least focusing on women population first, and then identifying such different approaches, how we can utilize it further as well. Similar on this line, we have also done various different retrospective studies on looking into how are different risk factors evolving lung cancer as well. Again, we presented another project at World Lung at San Diego now 1.5 years back as an oral presentation where we showcased that air pollution, asbestos, are also big risk factors at global level in top 10 countries of U.S. where our analysis was focusing, in top 10 countries of the world, including U.S., where our analysis was focusing on, that it showcased that immediately after tobacco, air pollution and asbestos are very important risk factors too. But along with all these things, it's also important to highlight that in particular countries and geography of the world, as well as in particular genders, so focusing on females, there is almost 30% to 40% of population who have none of these risk factors identified. And they might be having even higher molecular alterations. And based on current guidelines of lung cancer screening, we are missing all this patient population as well. That's why doing these various different retrospective studies, understanding risk factor analysis for lung cancer, can help us a lot guide on how can lung cancer screening be more broader approach, can have a more broader approach to include higher number of patient population so that this lung cancer is identified at an earlier stage itself.
I see. Thank you for delving into that research. I see detection and screening as important aspects of cancer care, so I appreciate you delving into the details there. I think this covers a lot of what's happening right now in the thoracic oncology or lung cancer space. But when you look towards the future, where do you hope to see research and treatment strategies evolve across the thoracic oncology field? And what sort of future goals or challenges do you hope to be addressed in the future?
I think so. The novel therapeutics are really exciting that might be coming in thoracic oncology. One of them would be bispecifics or BiTEs. One of the treatment, tarlatamab, has already entered into small cell lung cancer phase and has kind of revolutionized small cell lung cancer space as well, which was kind of being stagnant for many years. Various different newer approaches are coming for newer bispecifics like bi-agonist on T cells as well as oncolytic viruses as well. And all these treatments along with newer ADCs could be a potential next approach in changing how we are currently treating lung cancer as well. Along with that, combining these novel therapeutics with existing chemotherapy or existing immunotherapy and how all the sequencing will pan out will be really interesting to see in next few years. And I think so an important goal will be to make lung cancer a chronic disease where patients can survive not only just for a few months or for a few years, but for decades. And with incorporating liquid biopsy, we can potentially aim for a cure or as close to cure as possible, even in stage 4 setting as well. That's what I'm most excited about entering into this field as a faculty and as an attending soon.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I like the way that you put it, aiming to make lung cancer more of a chronic disease, potentially opening the door for survival, perhaps even good quality of life for years down the line. Appreciate you sharing that. I think we covered a lot of ground today, but was there anything else that you wanted to discuss or bring up that we did not talk about previously?
I think so. Two aspects which I think would be coming up soon in World Lung in September in Seoul as well as like how is AYA landscape, which is adolescent and young adult landscape, evolving and how are the molecular testing in AYA being different as compared to adults? That's an interesting field coming out as well because AYA population require different treatment approach, different kind of needs, which is very important to focus on and learn as well. I think the second aspect, again, going back to precision medicine, is how can we have more and more fusions and alterations being detected. So probably is it by ctDNA plus ctRNA approach or having a more wider platform with genomes, exomes, or utilizing MRD testing. All those things would be coming up at World Lung as well. Some of the studies that we are running at University of Miami would be focused in portrait as well. So many more things to come in future.
Yeah, for sure. But those do sound like very important topics that you brought up, especially regarding the AYA, the adolescent and young adult population. I've seen bits and pieces of literature dedicated to that population in other disease states as well, lymphoma, for example. But I know that represents an unmet need of sorts, but appreciate you going into detail about that. Those are all the questions that I had for you today. Was there anything else that you just wanted to, you know, bring up or talk about?
No, other thing which I'm really interested and excited about is medical education aspect as well. So I presented at this ASCO 2026 a poster on boot camp for hem-onc fellows and how various different 101s and teaching the basics of hematology and oncology can be really impactful for the fellows, because we have a big jump from residency to fellowship. And having those boot camp 101 sessions in the beginning of the fellowship can be very impactful. So we are trying to implement it again this year as well, make some more modifications, have some collaborations, and make it even more interactive, chalk talk, case-based discussion. And once this year's boot camp will be done in September, October as well, we'll have even more substantial results to showcase and potentially share and collaborate with other institutes across the country as well. So that's my other passion, along with my thoracic oncology in phase one, some medical education aspect as well.
Absolutely. The education aspect of it just seems like very important and something that you're just naturally good at. I know, like, we've already plugged the Career Center series, but you've done a lot of work with us in the past, just exploring like all these important topics about the next generation of researchers and clinicians and such. So appreciate you talking about that as well as all the other important things that you're involved with over the course today. So thank you once again for taking the time to speak with me and join us here. I appreciate it, Dr. Johnny.
Thank you so much. Once again, like, thanks a lot for bringing me here. It has been a phenomenal day, and hoping to continue work in future. Thanks a lot.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology On The Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available, or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology On The Go podcast is the official podcast of cancernetwork.com, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at cancernetwork without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at cancer-network.